NBI Studios, this is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Ruff.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to True Crime Binge.
I know you were.
So none of you wanted to hear what John Ramsey had to say. That wasn't even funny. They're just like, no, I don't. Fuck him. Like, we don't care what he's got to say. So how many of you are familiar with True Crime Binge? You listen to it all the time. Awesome. More than I thought. And how many of you are here trying to figure out what True Crime Binge is and why we're up here? Some of you. All right. So True Crime Binge is a show where every Wednesday we drop an episode where I interview other true crime podcasters. You get to know the podcaster. You get to know their podcast, how it's created, where it came from. And then we talk about a case. So you get an idea. The idea is if it's a podcaster you already know, then you get to know them more personally. And if you don't know them, you find new true crime podcasts to binge on, hence the name True Crime Binge. So my guest today, you guys have probably never heard of these guys. They're kind of new to the space. This is Aaron and Justin from the Generation Y podcast.
How y'all doing tonight?
If you get them confused, Justin's the one that looks like a mobster and Aaron's powder.
I think you just dated yourself.
So give me one more time. How many of you are real familiar with True Crime Binge? You know how this works. So for all of you people, you know that last year we hired a production manager to help run the show. She does more than I do. She does all the scheduling. She books the guests. And then she does research for me for when we do the show so that I can present and have a conversation as though I know all these facts about my guests. But me being the knucklehead that I am, I have never once managed to not call our production manager out for finding the creepy facts that she finds about our guests, that they don't come from me. So what I'd like to do, the person that makes this whole show happen, I'd like to bring her up on stage just for a minute, because none of you guys have got to ever meet her, and let her present her creepy little facts. Please welcome Miss Erica Cantor, our production manager.
Hello.
So now when you decided to be production manager, you didn't know that you'd have to speak in front of all these people.
Absolutely did not.
Right. She's usually blacked out on the Zoom so no one can see her or hear her.
And I can't defend myself either.
Yeah, she's not allowed to defend herself. So this time you can. So I don't know anything about Justin and Aaron other than their weird hair choices.
Well, I know a lot about them now.
Why don't you share some of our interesting facts about these guys?
Okay. Well, I'm going to start. I'll start light. I'll keep it light for now. So I do know that the two of you met working at a restaurant together when Justin noticed your Psychic TV shirt, T-shirt, and you guys started talking about music.
It was Aaron's T-shirt.
Justin and Aaron's T-shirt, yes.
Living in the Midwest at 1993, listening.
Talk about dating yourself.
Yeah. Somebody listening to Psychic TV, I'm listening to Skinny Puppy and Ministry. I was like, that's different, and we're going to get along.
And Aaron, you have a Skinny Puppy podcast, or you did at some point, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Yep.
Did you say Skinny Puppy?
That's a band. Yes.
Okay. Yeah, no, I used to be part of a forum, which that's kind of dating myself right there, but we were all into Skinny Puppy, and so then I started a podcast where I would have guests on, and then my co-host, he would make the music, and we would just talk about basically media. We would talk about music. We would talk about movies, whatever we wanted to, but awesome. It all centered around our love for the band.
That's awesome.
Well, you guys are lucky we started Generation Y. Otherwise, you'd be at this goth industrial convention. This other podcast. And you're all underdressed. I'm sorry.
Yeah, completely different aesthetic. So I know that you came up with the idea for Generation Y together after you, Justin, served on a jury for a murder trial. Is that correct? And you really wanted to talk about it.
Yeah, yeah. Jury selection was on a Monday morning and I put a man away for life on Thursday. And that's, you know, not
then I was able to exonerate him 6 years later due to jury misconduct.
Oh, ooh.
But, you know, most of us don't know how, you know, we watch Law and Order and CSI. And I'm like, I want to tell people how the system really works. It, you know, Aaron and I always had an interest in these things, but my interest was never like, oh, I'm about the grisly murder or anything. It was like, no, this is how this person was found guilty or not guilty or wrongfully convicted, what have you.
Okay, so now, Justin, I'm going to target you, okay? So I know that your birthday is November 17th, makes you a Scorpio, so go Scorpios.
Yeah.
Is it true that one of your favorite true crime documentaries is The Keepers?
No.
Well, your Instagram says otherwise.
Ooh. Oh, but it's a little
false advertising.
The Instagram probably more reflects me than it does
said,
him.
It said Justin : The Keepers in response to the question.
weirdly enough, I do love it. It's a great one, but it's not my favorite.
What's your favorite?
Well, when we first started the podcast, Aaron really wanted to talk about The Staircase. And that was literally my first introduction to a true crime documentary. So that one always holds a special place in my heart.
That's a good one.
I found out yesterday that if you want to see the vein in Jim Clemente's temple that comes right here, all you have to do is pop into a room and say, the owl did it, and leave.
Please do
that. You'll
hear
him yelling at you 200 feet down the hallway. So,
when it comes to documentaries, though, mine are Dear Zachary and The Keepers. So yep. It would be me, yes. Not yep. Justin. Okay.
That's probably what the misinformation probably. On our social media was actually Aaron.
But I'll blame
whoever
it. I'll
researched
blame it, on you
it may have made a boo boo. Yeah.
No, it was Bob. Thought, it was Bob.
I thought misinformation was not allowed on social media.
Yeah, wait. I thought everything on the internet was 100% true.
Yeah, right.
Abe Lincoln said so. Said, don't trust everything.
Did he post that on Twitter?
Yeah.
Okay, great. Okay, so then let's move on. I do know, Justin, that you do apparently pronounce the word picture weirdly.
Oh, yeah.
That's a big point of contention.
And now, like, I almost intentionally mispronounce words just because Aaron answers all the emails and hate mail and stuff. And I'm like,
so how do you pronounce picture?
I say pitcher.
Pitcher. How do you pronounce the thing that has two handles and one wheel that you roll stuff around in?
Wheelbarrow?
Well, what?
Wheelbarrow.
Did you say barrel?
Barrel. Yeah.
Fuck you to everyone who says I'm pronouncing it wrong. In the Midwest, we say wheelbarrow.
Yeah. I just no, same here. Yeah. And what's up?
What are you,
else?
A barrow guy?
Yeah.
I think Aaron and I are barrow.
I like to be accurate.
Barrow. Yeah. But, yeah.
But we don't say Warsh or Rassel or the Crick. We don't say any of that. I literally met a guy who said George Washington, and I'm like...
Oh, and by the way, speaking of pronunciations, Justin brought up the whole Will Smith controversy where somehow he beat Denzel Washington at the Oscars. And for me, I said Denzel Washington, and everyone kept running in and saying, how come you don't know how to pronounce his name? So I've been having to send the video of Denzel talking about his name and saying how no one's ever gotten it right. He's basically given up trying to correct everyone. And so now he's Denzel, even though he's Denzel.
I don't want to throw a little kink into your thing here, but it was actually Chris Rock that he beat at the Oscars. He completely mispronounced it.
That's not a surprise, though. The surprise is beating Denzel. That's the real... Justin's right. That's the surprise.
Sorry, it's a Red Bull and Ritalin kind of morning. So,
for me, it was a whiskey ginger kind of morning. So, all right. So, Justin, you used to skateboard.
Yes.
You went to college for theater.
Yes.
You got into IT to pay for college, but wasn't really your passion, right?
What was funny is I was getting a high-paying job to pay for college to get a job as an actor in theater where I would have starved to death. And I'm like, I might as well just stick with the job that's paying for college. And I dropped out of college and became a very high-paid IT person.
But we can all agree that it's creepy as shit that she knows that, right?
Yeah. No, that's
never tell
you dug deep.
Oh, well, just wait. So I'm going to list off some of your favorite comedy movies. I bet you've never had somebody tell you your own favorites to your face, but here we go. Team America, Ace Ventura, Naked Gun, Monty Python and the Holy Grail, and Christmas Vacation.
Those are mine.
You guys are posting wrong on Instagram. This is all. It says Justin Colon. Aaron is running the Instagram, clearly.
My favorite comedy is Grizzly Man.
Okay.
Because that's a comedy.
Is that Grizzly Man Don't Poke the Bear?
Yes.
Yeah. I think I've seen that.
Ace Ventura, the original or the sequel?
Actually, both.
The sequel's literally terrible. Both.
No, it's hilarious.
I mean, I guess when he comes out of the rhino's butt, that's...
Don't you remember the whole mucus thing? Yeah. Or the raccoon at the beginning.
Right. Yeah. All right, I'll give you that.
Okay, well, now since I've gotten so much wrong with Justin, we'll go to Aaron. So you were born on December 28th in Detroit, Michigan. Go Michiganders. We got three Michiganders on the stage. Now you live in Kansas City, correct? Where your favorite local restaurant is an Indian place called Seva.
That's actually correct. And you pronounced it correctly.
Thank you. You put the pronunciation on there for me, so thanks. And then your house, your neighbors kindly refer to your house as the crime house. Do they not?
Yeah, we're real popular.
Did they not?
Why do they call it the crime? I mean, we could use my imagination.
Honestly, I think it's because most of our street, there are a lot of highly religious people on our street. And so when they looked down at our end of things, there's an officer and his family lives across the street from us. And we're known as like the pagan end of the road or something like that.
I think you're witches.
But when they found out I had a crime podcast, now we're just the crime house. And then the officer's house, they don't even talk about them anymore. So now we're crime house.
And in Aaron's neighborhood, it's like I would say every five houses is a police officer that lives there. It's a very,
very secure neighborhood.
Yeah. When I drive to his house, I can't speed.
All right. Aaron, you got into... Your interest in true crime, I guess, was sparked by In Search Of with Leonard Nimoy and the novel Zodiac.
That's right.
Is that correct? Great. Okay, so now I'm doing better.
Cool. Good talk.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
You're going back up now.
Yeah. Okay, I'm building myself back up there. All right, you're a martial artist or mixed martial arts fan?
Yeah, we watch UFC.
USC?
Yeah.
Did you say he's a martial artist?
No, I miss.
Or a martial fan, artist.
Martial arts fan, mixed martial arts fan.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yes. Aaron and I watched the UFC from UFC 1, like from the beginning. And I've never taken a mixed martial arts class or anything, but I've watched the hell out of that. I bet I could put a rear naked choke on somebody.
It's really like the shirtless, sweaty men rubbing together with each other.
I actually did put someone in a rear naked choke when I worked at the restaurant. With Justin, and I was there, and there was a young lady working there, and then the cook kept bothering her and trying to get her to go out with him, but in a very inappropriate manner. And I walked up to him and I said, "You need to knock it off." And he said, "What are you going to do about it?" I put him into a rear naked choke and started squeezing, and
put
he had to
sleep.
Tap to give up.
Why did you make him naked? I mean, couldn't you have just left his... It would have worked with his clothes on, I bet.
It's more intimate.
You shouldn't
that
just
way.
Blurt out anything because what's in your head is only in your head. Now you've shared it with everyone.
I'm just imagining you like, I'm going to whoop your ass and just take your shirt off.
Hold on.
We're going to
unbutton these pants.
These pants got to go if I'm going to put you in this.
It was not a sanctioned bout, so we were actually still dressed.
Bob, when you take your clothes off before, it's a show of dominance.
Right. I think he's used to that.
Unless it's cold outside.
Okay, my last one, Aaron, you have an Instagram that I love for your three cats, Bo, Stormy Squirrel, aka Tiny Werewolf, and Baby.
Yeah.
But you also, at least at one time, had a bird, a tarantula, and some fish.
And two rats.
And now two rats. What are the rats' names?
Well, they're named after the singers Billy and Taylor.
Swift.
Taylor Swift, Billie Eilish.
Yeah. Nice.
You know, I have just one more thing to add. I did a little more research than you, Erica, and it's Aaron won't eat yellow cheese.
That's true. If you put yellow cheese on something, it's dead to me. It won't. That's not going in.
Why won't you eat yellow cheeses?
I don't know why, but I think when I was a kid, it's kind of like white chocolate. I had some and my stomach was like, uh-uh. And then ever since then, I've just been like, I'm not eating white chocolate or yellow cheese.
Does anybody eat white chocolate?
I like it.
Oh, okay.
But I eat anything, literally anything. Like, I can hang out with vegans. I can hang out with meat eaters. I'll eat it all. It is all good to me.
All right. Well, that concludes our research portion. Big hand for Erica Cantor.
Thank you, guys.
All right, that right there shows you how much work I put into the interviews on True Crime Bench. So on a more serious note, what I wanted to talk to you guys about, and the reason we have Justin and Aaron up here today, is because they are, I mean, if not the one of the original true crime podcasts. Was there anybody before you guys, or were you the first?
I got this.
Justin loves to talk about it. We were the first.
Yeah. No. Dan Szapanski, True Murder, was the first. And I love Dan Szapanski, no shade at all. But I'm going to tell you, he is this crabby old guy who wrote an amazing book. And he would interview authors and police officers and stuff. But he was always so grumpy during it. And he put one episode out where his guest didn't show up. So it's 10 minutes of him just going, I don't know where he is. Blah, 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 blah. And he published it. And that's my favorite episode.
So what year did you guys make the first Generation Y podcast?
2012. It was in June.
2012. So that I didn't even know what a podcast was in 2012. And at what point were you able to turn it into a career for yourselves?
Probably not till 2015 or 16.
Yeah. So you were 3 years of just making it for love of the game.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. I think our first sponsor was either my wife's shop or his father's company.
That's all. So what I'd like to talk a little bit about, since you've been around now for 10 years in the space, is the changes that you've seen in the true crime space over those 10 years. Because it's a very different world now than when you started. So can you talk a little bit about what you've seen change over the years?
Jump in there.
Yeah, the main thing that you'd see change is when we first started, we would get a few emails and messages. And a lot of them would actually be, are you former law enforcement? Because if you're not, you may not be qualified to talk about crimes.
Right.
Yeah, if we weren't lawyers or authors or law enforcement, you're not supposed to talk about true crime.
What are your qualifications?
Yeah, and so there's been a huge arc with that over the years. So when you started, it was like, don't talk about crimes at all. Okay. And that was like the first wave of true crime podcasts were podcasts like yours, where you're, you know, just telling stories about the crime and you were told to stay in your lane.
Yeah.
Well, it has a lot to do with the time.
Yeah.
Dan Szapanski started at least several years before we did, probably even more than that. And so he would only talk to authors and people like that. So they were qualified. And so all they had to go off of was, well, Dan's qualified, but you're not. That was basically the message.
And right. And Dan ended up coming on our show. And that was like our first bump in exposure to huge numbers. So all love to Dan. He helped us out.
So when, because I came in, I guess I would call it the second wave.
We were pre-serial. You were kind of
post, yeah, and there was like, yeah, so it was like BC. There's yeah. Before like it was BS. you guys were 2 years BS.
Yeah, thanks.
And I was 6 months
PS.
Yes. But so you had the first, there was like this true crime podcast that started to come in and grow, and everybody's told to stay in there. And it was like, and about the time people started to accept, I mean, did you guys start to feel by 2014, like an acceptance of what you were doing? Like people stopped giving you shit for talking about things that you shouldn't be talking about.
Yeah. And it obviously Serial blew up. I mean, there was an SNL skit about it and everything. And so at that point, there was all these articles that came out of like, if you love Serial, you'll love these podcasts. And we were always listed because we were BS.
You were BS. Right. Yeah. You had a BS podcast and that's why they put you in there.
And you started out with Serial Dynasty.
Right.
Yeah.
We didn't need to mention that, though.
Who's the host?
Right. But the next wave that started was, you know, Serial comes out. And that was something very different, a serialized long-form podcast. At the time, which seemed like an investigative podcast. I don't know. I think a lot of us know that that really fell short of, I mean, bless Sarah Koenig for what she did and kicking this thing off and bringing that story to light. But then there wasn't as much investigation as we thought.
It was storytelling.
Right.
It was exposure,
yeah.
too.
Yeah. But what it did is it launched this new wave of podcasts, which is where I came in. I came in 2015, where now the investigative podcast, it really got kicked off, I would say, with Robbie, Susan, and Colin with the Undisclosed podcast that said, okay, we're going to do something different. We're going to say, we don't care if we sound like shit. We don't care, which they'll tell you their first few episodes were almost unlistenable. They're much better. Well, they're done now, sadly. But they got much better and they got a team behind them. They said, we're just going to talk about an investigation and start really breaking down a case. And they didn't get to stay in your lane business because they were lawyers.
Yeah.
So they were allowed. But then comes me, a fireman, was like, you know what? I want to investigate not only the case, but the way the attorneys worked the case and the way the judge acted about the case. And that came that took the hate off of you guys and put it on to get out of our lane.
Yeah. Yeah, put the mic down and pick up the hose, buddy.
Right.
Exactly. Get back to work.
Yeah, and it's just, it's crazy, and there's a lot of other changes I want to talk about, but it's, what's amazing to me now, so 7 years since I've been into this, when we were constantly told to stay in our lane, cops hated what we were doing, lawyers hated what we were doing, that this is our space and you shouldn't be there, and no one knew what to do with me because I was this outsider. You know, I'm going to the courthouses, pulling documents, reporting, investigating, interviewing people that were connected to these cases. And they were, I didn't have to follow the rules of a lawyer. I didn't have to follow the rules of a police officer. I was a complete outsider. And then I brought a couple hundred thousand more outsiders with me to help engage. So now there's all these amateurs and we were told to stay in our lane. And it's the Undisclosed team, Michelle Barron. You got, you know, Josh Hallmark with the Israel Keyes case with the True Crime Bullshit. The list goes on and on and on. A lot of them all are around here that are non-lawyers, non-police officers, non-law enforcement that are investigating these cases. And while they're telling us to stay in our lane, look at what's happened in the last 7 years. Look at how many people have been exonerated, wrongful convictions overturned, missing person cases solved, cold cases solved by outsiders like you guys, like us. And to me, that's been the greatest asset. You know, Allison Clayton of the Innocence Project of Texas, who I've worked with a lot. You know, when she was told that she had to work with me, she was like, you're saddling me to work with this fucking podcaster on this case that I'm working on. And since then, the Innocence Project is now bringing cases to us and bringing cases to other podcasts. They've realized the value of the outsiders getting involved. And of the ordinary people around the world that are pitching in and helping to solve these cases and make a difference. So I just want to take a minute and salute all of you, the outsiders, because I think it's our lane now.
Yeah.
The effective lane.
And where it could be exploitive or, you know, entertainment for some. I mean, we're sitting here at our booths and we have families coming up and giving us thumb drives or documents are like, my daughter's been missing for 20 years and no one cares. Can you please cover it? And that's the shift now because they can't get, a big TV network or police or anyone to look at their case. And now they have an outlet for it, you know?
Yeah. Do you guys get a lot of, I'm sure, because, so now you've kind of got this, you've got the almost storytelling, the episodic type episodes like you guys do, Nick and Captain with True Crime Garage do, and so many. Then you've got the investigative podcasts and the different comedy podcasts even that are all about true crime. But I don't think people realize how often do you guys have, doing what you do, people coming to you saying, please help us. No one, people are begging for a voice. Do you guys often have people coming to you asking them to give them that voice?
I'm sure you do too. It's almost weekly or daily. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I think that it's important to understand that so many of these podcasts that you listen to, that you enjoy, that are entertaining, that are even fun, that they are podcasting with purpose. They're creating this content with purpose because it may just be an interesting story to you, but for that family, I just had a woman of just right before I came up on stage, give me a pamphlet and this long write up about her daughter. And I do mostly wrongful conviction stuff. It's probably more up your guys' alley. But it's an unsolved case. The police closed it, said it's probably an accident. And so she just had been begging and fighting for years for somebody to look at her case. She needs somebody. And they figured out over the years that it's not the insiders that are going to do it. It's going to be guys like Justin and Aaron and all of you and us that are going to tell the stories, that are going to give them the voice, that are going to finally get some movement in their case. I mean, look what's happened in the West Memphis 3 case, a case that's lied dormant for 11 years. Since the Alford plea is moving again. Actually, in the court system, motions are filed on June 23rd. We have a hearing before a judge to test the evidence in that case, not because of anything that happened with the lawyers, not that because of anything that happened with a judge, because tens of thousands of ordinary people around the world blasted the DA's office with every email, phone call, standing outside the office, social media posts, until they had no other choice to listen to us. And so that's what I love about this space, what I love about this conference, about, you know, is all the good that gets done here. It's not like we're like Nick and the Captain just goofing around all the time.
and sadly, the squeaky wheel gets the grease, you know, whether it be a detective, he's got a caseload a mile long, or a prosecutor, he's like, what? Why should I care about you? Or why does this, you know, detective, why should she care about you and your case? And the more pressure you put on. And I mean, and the Golden State Killer was just solved after, you know,
right,
decades, because there is, you keep that pressure on there. You know?
Yeah. The other thing is too, so, I mean, I have an investigative podcast I'm a part of. I can't take all the credit. Most of the credit goes to my partner, Jake, but we do deep dives on cases on Framed.
That's
and
Framed, right?
Story. Yeah. And the great thing about that was, is there was a case many years ago in 2006, I believe, when Mario Cassaro, I mean, he ended up being convicted of the supposed murder of his coworker because Brian Carrick went to work one day and he disappeared. He never even left the building, as far as anyone can tell. And Kathleen Zellner represented him and she was able to free him. But, you know, when you listen to our season one of Frame, you can hear how all of the evidence, all of the forensic evidence pointed to somebody. And there are real questions about why the investigators didn't run with the evidence. They ran with a theory. The theory was weighed more heavily. So, yeah, talk about staying in your lane. If you want to stay in the lane and get these same terrible results that put people away, then you can go with that. But otherwise, the rest of us can start making noise. And changes can happen when they need to.
Yeah, because I think most people would agree, even a lot of the people that are on the inside would agree that our criminal justice system's broken. And it didn't just break. It was always broken.
Yeah.
The system was, it's one of those things that looks good on paper. Like, oh, well, people are innocent until they're proven guilty. So that really puts the prosecutors at a disadvantage. So the prosecutors get to make the first opening statements. They get the final word. They get all the advantages at trial because they're at a disadvantage because the jury knows that this person is innocent unless we can prove them guilty beyond a reasonable doubt. When the reality is that was never the case. It's never been the case. Justin, like the jury you were on where you wrongfully convicted that guy.
But I didn't like the way he looked at me when he was sitting at the table.
Right.
I saw the murder in his eyes.
I saw him sitting there and I figured the police wouldn't have put him there unless he's guilty.
But you know what? Sadly, something about that case, and I feel very good about my decision, but the prosecutor has all the resources. They have all the evidence. They have everything against it. The defense attorney had nothing. They don't have the resources. It was a public defender. She probably had a million cases. She didn't even bother cross-examining the witnesses. Didn't even bother. What was I supposed to do when it's just like, this guy says this dude killed his girlfriend, and there's all I'm told is no fingerprint or DNA evidence was found at the scene connecting the murderer, but no DNA or fingerprint evidence was found from the guy that lives there either. And I'm like, well, the guy says he killed his girlfriend and they have a relationship and they've known each other and they're buying drugs from each other. This is what I have to go on. And the defense didn't even show up, like literally didn't show up.
I think a big problem with this whole system, as you're talking about, is the fact that prosecutors can do wrong, knowingly do wrong.
Right.
And you can't really hold them accountable.
Immunity.
They have God powers.
Yeah, they have immunity, so they don't have to worry about, you know, it. There was one prosecutor in the United States one time that actually was imprisoned for prosecutorial misconduct. I believe it was in Texas, and I believe he served 10 days.
For how long did
Sounds
he put
brutal.
He put a guy away for like decades,
right,
wrongfully, and yeah, he served 10 days.
Yeah, and you brought up a good point, Justin, about the, you know, a big broken piece of our system is the disadvantage, the disparity you have if you don't have money.
Yeah.
You know, there's a huge racial component and there's a huge money component. If you have a public defender and don't have money for experts, while the prosecutors can just hire any experts they want and they can get any testing they want done, the person with the public defender, that public defender has to go to the judge and beg and plead for an allowance to be able to hire a public or to hire an expert. Rarely are they allowed to, and they might have a budget for one expert. You know, so you see cases like the staircase or you know, like that, where they've got all this money. And I don't really have an opinion about that case. I don't know anything about it, really. But they have all this money and they can hire the best attorneys that'll focus on their case and the best experts to refute and to create a good defense in front of the jury. But the problem is most people don't have that. Most people that are in the system don't have that opportunity.
And I remember the first kind of critical email I got that actually I took to heart and was like, oh, I need to shift my verbiage on this. But it was from a public defender because I made an offhanded comment like, oh, this guy had a public defender and he got screwed in court. And they took it as a personal offense that I was bashing public defenders. And I'm like, no, they're doing God's work. They're doing, you know, they're doing what they can. But they laid it out in their email. They're like, I have 300 cases. I might have 5 minutes before trial to review who I'm about to defend. And I have to figure out, you know, I don't have any money for an expert witness to counter there. So all I can do is counter or cross-examine the prosecutor's expert witness. And it really was eye-opening to me to hear that.
I think when you also talk about broken system, you have to bring up how many people are incarcerated in the United States. And we talk about how free we are, but you can compare our country to virtually any other country in the world, North Korea even, and you'd be shocked at where our numbers are at. Forget what proof there was. There's something going on there.
No.
Does every other country not care?
Well, I mean, just look at the rate of people don't realize that you watch TV dramas about court cases every time somebody gets arrested in the trial and everything that happens. The fact of the matter is like 97% of cases plead out.
Wow.
And I get so angry when I hear people, they'll say, well, no one would plead guilty unless they're guilty.
Well,
it's such bullshit.
My saying is plea deals screw the innocent and only help the guilty.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because they come to you and tell you like, look, we're going to take you to trial. You don't have money to defend yourself. And if you lose, you're going to go to prison for 25 years, or you can plead guilty and go for 5 years and be out in 2.5. It just puts you in an impossible position all the time. And I've had the same, I think we've all had that same email. I guess we could talk a little bit about what we've learned along the way, because that's definitely the public defender. I was the same way. I started off and I'm like, I'm just looking at statistics and like all these people that are pleading out or losing with public defenders as opposed to private attorneys, and didn't really at the time consider that it's not the fault of the public defender. When you have an attorney that has thrown a caseload of literally hundreds of cases and they have 20 of them they got to deal with every day, they don't have the resources to do a good job. Not to do a good job, but to do a thorough job, I should say.
Yeah.
They're at a disadvantage.
For sure.
Yeah.
So what other lessons have you guys learned along? I mean, I think you guys learned not to talk about the Adnan Syed case that one time. That's how we met.
But there are some cases that I'm like, oh, I will totally talk. Like, we normally stay away from the hot topic cases these days, but after watching Making Murder season 2, I want to slam that so hard.
Have you?
Not yet.
Well, you're early on the ball. It was, what, 2 years ago that came out?
I know. No,
it's still hot for him.
Aaron was a little worried because I was just like, no. Because how do you go from the first season where it was the boyfriend or the police to, oh, it was one of his brothers now? I'm like, you're just making it up as you go. And
they're getting closer to Steven.
Yeah. And then there was the little blood smear on the dashboard from the key. And they're like recreating this. And I'm like, the guy looks like he's playing the game of Operation, not to like smear the blood. I'm like, this is bullshit. No, Avery did it.
He's still in prison, by the way.
Good.
Does anyone want to disagree with Justin about it?
We're all called like bleeding hearts because we take on these wrongful conviction cases, and people are like, oh, well, that, you know, that person probably did it. That person probably did it. But I'm like, yeah, my bleeding heart only goes so far. And then when there's something obvious like the Avery case, I'm like, no.
let's talk about hate mail.
You're talking to me then, right?
Aaron, you haven't talked much. You were the one that handles all the emails and stuff, right, for you guys?
I don't read the emails. I don't read the reviews. Haven't in years, because some mouth breather in Idaho is not going to change my way of doing my podcast.
So, Aaron, when you read the email from the mouth breather in Idaho...
No offense against Idaho.
Yeah. Anybody here from Idaho? well, fuck you, according to Justin.
See what he started.
Right.
It could have been Wyoming. It could have been.
Now I'm getting the second one from Idaho.
Do you have any particular hate mail that you've gotten that was either something you actually learned something from?
Oh, I have examples. Yeah, okay. Let's start with. Now, you brought up Adnan Syed. Okay, so years ago, we had a listener in New York, and she would send us pictures of her cat and tell us, hey, if you're ever out, we got, you know, I'll make you dinner, whatever, come by. You know, she's very friendly, always gave us feedback on our episodes. And then one day, we released an episode where Justin had interviewed someone named Rabia Chaudhry. Uh-huh. And the next thing I know, this woman who is a huge mega fan, always told us we were number one, said, you're dead to me. I'm so disappointed. I can't believe you would have that terrible person on. And that showed me that anybody that listens to us could be gone tomorrow.
Yeah.
Because right. It's that simple.
You guys are very passionate.
Robbie, I didn't understand where the problem was. But, you know, I believe the email. Like, they really hated this person. And I, even though I didn't understand why, I knew this person was no longer listening to us. So we lost a listener in New York.
My favorite one, though, was I don't remember the case, but it was a mother and daughter. Mother probably killed the daughter. And there were plans to go eat at Taco Bell for dinner. And I said, who plans to go to Taco Bell? That just that just happens, you know, and it's like, you don't plan to go to a strip club. You just end up there and it's always a bad idea. And that's Taco Bell. And I was accused of poor shaming. Anyone that can't afford anything outside of Taco Bell, they hated me because I was a poor shamer. this is the level of criticism we can receive.
Have you guys been accused of words that you didn't know existed until you? So it's kind of the, as we've grown, like I've there's a lot of ists, like fill in the word ist that I'll get. And I'm like, you, and it's like that. It would be, I don't know. We were talking about somebody like walking in and doing this. And I said something like, well, anybody could walk and do that. And then I got told I was an ableist, which, and I'm not knocking those where like we're all learning, right? We're growing, but it's very hard. And I'm curious if you guys agree with it. It's very difficult to be in a public light where every single week you get on and you talk for a living and you put it out, especially if you're like me, who really doesn't care for social media and doesn't do a lot with social media. I don't know when the goalposts move all the time. And so it's stuff like that. I'm like, I'm not allowed to say somebody walked because I never even heard the term ableist before. And we learned from them, but do you guys, have you ever been accused of being something that you had to look up?
Never.
No, we have been isted before. I remember there was way, I don't remember the case, but there was a case where we said our commentary and gave our opinions, and someone accused us of being racist because we didn't agree with them. And I didn't know how they made that leap, but I was offended, and I told them I was offended, and I didn't like that. But
were you offended for yourself?
It's like a trigger. Like, I don't like being accused of stuff that I'm not.
Oh, right. It happens to me daily.
Call me bald all day.
Yeah. Right. but we get a lot of emails for people that are offended for someone else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Those are always difficult to navigate because you never know. And this is just real talk. Like, I'm not even like knocking some of this stuff, but just so you guys know some of the stuff that we deal with, you know. So we'll do... I'll give an example. I played a clip when during an investigation,
you're about to put your foot in your mouth.
Yeah. And I said this word. No, but I'm interviewing this guy about the case, and it seemed like it was probably a racially motivated crime. The person that's interviewing was very clearly a racist by the words he used. And I fucking aired it. I had that discussion in my mind whether I should or not, because I don't like the words and that he was saying.
But you wanted to show the ugliness of it, the horribleness of it.
But I think there's this line between being respectful and then me. Why am I going to hide the fact that this guy's an asshole?
Yeah.
And it may even be relevant to the crime.
But you gave him a platform now, and that's what they probably
did. And he used some language. It was... nope, not going to do it. I was going to quote it. Decided not to. But he used point. Some language that was very offensive to the African American community, not the big one, but it was, you know, and I played this, and I got a million emails from white ladies telling me how offended they were by it, and so the hard position it puts me in. And I wonder if it puts you, if you guys ever get in that situation, is I get it, but it's like, it's not my black listeners that are upset. Like, and as a matter of fact, some of them have told me, I'm glad you played it. I'm glad that fucker was exposed like that. But then I've got another group over here telling me that I'm an asshole for playing it. And so I guess what I'm saying is give us a little grace sometimes because we don't know what the hell to do.
Well, we will get emails saying, oh, you guys didn't do a good enough job. You didn't bring in the racial issue enough. And then other people are like, you're always making it about race. It's like it's from both sides and you can never do it correctly for most people. We're just telling it in the way we want to tell it. And
Yeah, we got about 5 more minutes. Is there anything else we can do to complain about our jobs or? Yeah.
Is this where we bring in a case for 5 minutes?
Yeah, any cases. And all I can say is I don't get offended when people mix up the subgenre of metal that I listen to. They're like, oh, Justin listens to metal. I'm like, no, I listen to grindcore. Educate yourself. It's grindcore.
What is grindcore?
It is the most like aggressive. It's like speed metal and thrash metal all in one, like smashed together.
Can you give us a little example and maybe throw it on a beat or something?
Well, one of my favorite bands is Pig Destroyer.
Pig Destroyer. Like, so are we talking, is this like Gwar type stuff?
Gwar is a little bit more theatrical.
Oh, that's too soft for you?
Aaron's Gwar, I'm more Pig Destroyer.
So is the stuff you listen to, like, do the lyrics go something like, is it kind of like that?
Yeah,
that,
but if you actually read them, they're very poetic.
We'll need an audio filter to figure that out.
Right, right. Yeah, I just said something racist. And I'm sorry. I didn't know. I apologize. We've got a few minutes left. If I were to walk down the floor, there are a couple people that would want to ask any questions.
Jump in there. Come on.
Okay, we'll just keep going then.
Oh, God.
Oh, my God.
Why wasn't I invited?
Sit down.
We know you too well.
Sit down.
There go your 3 minutes.
There you go. 3 minutes are gone now.
I had a whole thing planned.
Ladies and gentlemen, Bob Ruff. Oh, wait, that's that other guy. That other bearded tattoo.
Similar.
Do you guys want to hear another crossover show at True Crime Garage and Gen Y? Do you like those?
And Bob Ruff.
Yeah, I'll just fuck you guys.
It's been a while.
Bob, there's a good barbecue joint you could eat at.
Get out of here. We were just discussing, do you have a favorite hate mail?
Yeah, I had this guy that, last week.
By the way, Captain is the only one that reads every email and takes everyone so deep to the heart.
I do not. He told me to go hang myself.
Oh.
And I told him that I just got done trying, but the rope broke. And then he wrote me back and said, I'm so sorry. I hope you actually didn't try to hang yourself. I was having a bad day. And I said, so was I.
So one of the things we've learned is that we don't joke about suicide anymore.
Except for the captain.
This is Bob Ruff throwing me under the bus for the second time.
And you don't say commit suicide. You say took one's life or killed themselves.
Or completed suicide.
Yeah,
you can't say that either.
Oh, is that not okay?
You can't say that either.
See, I was literally told in an email that
I'll send you a guide.
There's a guide. Since he's sitting here, so tomorrow's episode of Truth and Justice is an excerpt from a live show that I did with Captain in Michigan a couple of weeks ago, where we discussed the JonBenet Ramsey case. And during the course of that, we disagreed. I leaned towards the Jim Clemente side, and he leaned towards some nonsense Santa
thing. And I leaned towards logic.
Right. So Thursday night when we get into town, I'm sitting at the bar having a drink with Jim Clemente, and Captain tells me that he just got in and he's checking in. I'm like, oh, stop by the bar and have a drink with me. And so he stops by and he's there with Jim. I'm like, Jim, this is the captain. Captain Jim, by the way, the captain says that you're wrong about everything about the JonBenet case and you're kind of an idiot.
Yeah. He didn't say kind of an idiot. Yeah. He said he thinks you're an idiot.
Yeah.
And then Jim yelled at me for an hour. And I did pee myself just a little bit.
And Jim, that vein?
That vein.
Both of them are popping real hard. Yeah.
You're trying to get them thrown out of the casino.
Right? It was the best thing ever. It was so bad. Everybody, so my wife, Becky, and Zach, and Zach's wife, Michelle, were all sitting there. And the three of them were like, I'm so uncomfortable. And I'm going, this is the best thing that's ever happened to me.
Yeah.
Look at them go.
And I came from Columbus, which was 40 degrees. So I had a coat on. And so for an hour, I'm sweating inside my coat.
He had a green coat on that, like a parka. He looked like the Riddler from the new Batman movie.
A lot. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And I have this guy that looks like a penis wearing glasses yelling at me. And then there's, of course, Bob.
Oh,
I'm telling Jim you said that about it.
Yeah.
That's not the best story. The best story is Idris Elba.
Oh, yeah.
We've got time.
I big timed Idris Elba, and my wife's still mad at me about it. When we when we were, I was doing a speaking tour in the UK, we were in London. And after the show, we went to the some bar in Notting Hill. And I have a, I got a thing about crowds and people in my bubble. I get a little weird about it. And
what are you talking about? He hugs you. Like every time he sees me, he hugs me.
It's because you're so soft and cuddly.
Just like you, Bob.
So we go to this pub and somebody meets me out front and says, everybody's waiting in the back for you to take pictures with them. And I'm like, all right. I walk in and the pub is wall to wall people. And so immediately my blood pressure went bing. I'm like, oh God, like this is not my thing. I do not like this. And then I start walking in and some guy says, hey, Idris Elba's here and he wants to take a picture with you. I don't know who Idris Elba is.
Only one of the best looking guys in the history of guys.
Literally was sexiest man alive that year. So I go walking through the bar and this guy's like guiding me through. I'm like, I got to just get to those people, take those pictures and get the fuck out of here. And so I'm winding my way back through there. And then he's like, here he is. And he goes up and there's Idris at the bar. This beautiful man. And he's like, here. And he's like, hey, man. And he walks over and shakes my hand. And I shook his hand and he goes, you want to take a picture? And I said, I like you do it. Picture. I said,
exactly. That's
I said, right, you want to take a picture? Or he says, you want to take a picture? And I was like, I will in a minute, man. I've got a bunch of people back there. So I'll catch you in a little bit. And walked away, did my thing with all the people from the show. Oh, and then I came back to the glaring, just hateful eyes of my wife. Just, why did you do that? I'm like, do what? She said, why would you not take the picture with Idris Elba? You blew him off. I'm like, who's Idris Elba? And she's like,
well, Becky also was mad at you because you didn't invite him back to the hotel. So you could take pictures.
All right.
And on that note, that's our time. His name's the captain. That's Justin and Aaron. Generation Y, True Crime Garage. Yeah. Check them out. I'm sure they'll be your next big True Crime binge. Thank you, everybody.
Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production, co-written and produced by Erica Bergenham. Music created and composed by Caden Ladislaw. Follow-up episodes are co-hosted by Janet Varney and Zach Weber. Our logo font was created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design. Our website is created, managed, and maintained by Katie Ross of createdintandem.com. Thank you to our volunteer transcription team, Erica Cantor, Kathy McElhaney, Courtney Wimberly, Kaywood Yomnick, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Athey, and Caroline Dwyer. Truth and Justice provides all investigative and advocacy work for the wrongfully convicted completely free of charge. We're able to do that in large part thanks to you, our listeners, through your generous pledges on Patreon. Patreon accounts for the overwhelming majority of our funding. The number one way you can support our work is to become a patron at patreon.com/truthandjustice. For just $5 a month, you'll get all episodes ad-free, a bonus pregame episode every Wednesday, and also a video version of the Friday follow-ups exclusive to our patrons. Patrons also get to participate and join the chat live in many of our interviews and get early access to much of our content. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice to sign up. You can also help us out by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. It doesn't cost you a penny and goes a long way towards making the show more visible. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. You can always keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the official Truth and Justice Podcast fans page. You can also connect with us on social media platform X @truthjusticepod. And to follow our personal accounts on social media, I can be found at Bob Ruff Truth. Janet can be found at Janet Varney, and Zach is at Z to the Q. However you do it, stay engaged and stay in touch. But as for now, we're signing off. I'm Bob Ruff.
I'm Zach Weaver.
And I'm Janet Varney.
And this has been Truth and Justice.